This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Got me all juiced up for college baseball starting today.
Yeah, you should be.
East Carolina, Texas. Carolina doesn't get on the field until tomorrow. So I think we get half of the field starting today, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Sounds about right.
I think 1 o'clock for ECU in Greenville, or is it noon in Greenville? I should probably know that off the top of my head. But we got baseball in Greenville and then the Tar Heels tomorrow, 11 a.m. What? It's too early to play baseball at 11 a.m.
No, no.
It's not too early?
No. Give me more early games.
Get out of the heat. We want to get out of the heat, right?
Yeah, beat the heat before it really gets cooking.
All right. Well, you're probably correct on that. It's noon, by the way, for Texas and East Carolina. Aaron Fitt, D1Baseball.com, is going to join us in about 15 minutes. And full disclosure, we taped this about an hour ago. So you will not hear baseball in the background when we talk to Aaron. In fact, he was on his way to the ballpark. So that's coming up in just a couple of minutes. A couple of quick things before we get cranked up. You know what starts today? Big Rock starts today. Fired up. We're going to actually talk to Hayes Permar about this. And then hopefully we'll have, in-depth reporting next week. Not from Hayes, but we're actively trying to get, an embedded reporter, maybe even somebody on a boat or with an interest in a boat. We'll do that. Real quick before we start, here's why Tiger Woods did not join the LIV series in spite of being offered an astounding sum of money. Remember, Greg Norman, who is the CEO of LIV Golf, himself offered Tiger very high nine figures. I don't even know how to process that, because nine figures, even if it's very low, is very high. So, like nine figures at $100 million is high. Mm-hmm. But we know the number. If the number for Phil was $200 million, well, the number for Tiger was probably, I'm guessing, $500 million. Yeah. I just have to guess.
I'd say at least double.
Honestly, if I were Liv, if you're going to offer him that, just offer him $1 billion. I mean, the Saudi royal family has 499 more billions. So why not just offer him one? But Tiger, not interested, he said. And maybe it's because, according to Forbes magazine, he is also a billionaire. LeBron James was just announced as a billionaire, the only active. Well, I guess Tiger's sort of active. But LeBron James, active in the NBA, billionaire. Do you know a sports other billionaire?
In terms of active?
Well, not active anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, obviously owners, a lot
right.
of them are.
Well, this guy's an owner.
You're talking about a former athlete?
Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan, yeah.
Yep. Jordan, LeBron, and Tiger. Billionaires. Anyway.
LeBron has expressed interest of owning an NBA franchise in Vegas.
He wants to own a team in Vegas. There's going to be a franchise in Vegas.
Yeah.
Right? There's just no question there's going to be a franchise in Vegas. Why not let LeBron own it? Let LeBron run a team. He's been running teams for a decade already. All right, one more thing. And I didn't know where to put this because it's just astounding to me. Drew Brees out at NBC. We've known this for a few weeks. Remember, Brees pretended to, I haven't decided yet. Like, it ain't your decision. NBC has decided not good. So 1 year in the studio was enough. They're replacing him with Jason Garrett.
Yay.
And all I could think of was, is there a problem with insomnia I am unaware of, and is NBC trying to solve it? Because who? Jason Garrett? What?
I got nothing.
when color commentating becomes just white. There's no color there. Gosh. All right. Thanks, NBC. Appreciate that. Jason Garrett. All right. Let's go. All right, we got game four tonight. Celtics this close, as I look at the TV, to putting the hammer down and taking a 3-1 lead on the Warriors as they head back to Golden State. San Francisco, this close, right?
Yep.
Is it a must win for the Warriors tonight, Dennis?
Yes.
All right.
Hayes Permar would tell me otherwise.
Yeah, I don't think it's a must win for this reason. The Warriors still get two home games.
Yeah, it's not.
Right? So it's not a must win, but, I mean, it would be a good idea.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're giving me the option, I'll take a win. But here's the way we have already started to process this. Is this the end of the Golden State Warriors dynasty? Why do we do this? We do it. Like, 2.5 weeks ago, we had given the NBA title to the Warriors mm-hmm. and had already crowned them the greatest team ever. No, not necessarily, but they were being put... Like, they already are in that category, but we had already crowned them. And now we've seen one look at, Boston, blah, 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 bigger. Like, Golden State can win this game. Golden State can win the series. I think Boston is better, but I also don't think that this necessitates grand proclamations of, well, it's over for the Warriors. It's Klay Thompson's first year back. He didn't even play the whole season because he wasn't ready yet. So we don't know what Klay Thompson is going to be like next year. Draymond Green has... Our friend Kanata Edwards yesterday said, looks cooked. Yeah, I'm not arguing that. But we'll see what Steve Kerr does in terms of lineup adjustments. Does Jonathan Kuminga play more? Does Moses Moody play more? Remember, they've played basically all year long without James Wiseman, a big man that they took in the draft a couple of years ago. So we'll see how this all shakes out. But, I mean, I think that the Warriors have a very bright future. You know what it all starts with, though, Dennis?
What's that?
If you're Steve Kerr, I think, and this is not a hot take, I think you need a healthy Steph Curry.
Steph fully expects to play. Horford rolled on top of him during the scrum for the loose ball. And I don't really know the extent of the injury. He's not going in for an MRI or anything like that. And he says he'll be ready to go, so I believe him.
He expects to play. He'll be ready to go, but that doesn't really answer the question because if he's compromised and is not operating at maximum efficiency, then Golden State is in trouble. If we're being honest about the Warriors, Steph's a question mark. Even Jordan Poole is a question mark in terms of offense. Andrew Wiggins, question mark. Everybody is a question mark except for Steph Curry. He is the exclamation point, and everybody else is the question mark. Boston has more exclamation points than question marks. Mm-hmm. Right? We know, I mean, yeah, Jason Tatum could play poorly. Jaylen Brown can play poorly. But they have so many more guys who are not just capable, but reliable offensively. Whether it's Horford, Marcus Smart, who admittedly had combined 4 points in game two. But there's more sources for offense for the Celtics than there are for the Warriors. And then you throw in Boston's defense. And I get why people have already decided that the Celtics are going to win this series. I actually think that they're right. The Celtics will, but that doesn't mean that it won't take 6 or 7 games. And I said this before, I think the winner of tonight's game will also win, it's Monday in San Francisco.
Yep.
I think the winner of tonight's game will win Monday. So if the Celtics go up 3-1, I think it's over. I do. We'll see if the if Boston can smell the finish line. Speaking of the finish line, on ice last night,
Kucherov in back of the net, Stamkos far flank, far point, Edmund near side, Sergachev wristing one, he scores! Mikhail Sergachev, the puck had eyes, 1:50 left in regulation time, Tampa Bay by one.
That, of course, the voice of John Forslund doing national radio for the Eastern Conference Finals, and you heard it here on 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh if you are a... If you were driving around listening to the radio last night. Real quick shout out, the Seattle Kraken's TV crew, Forslund, JT Brown, Allison Kukan in the studio, named the second best, tied for second with Vancouver, second best local broadcast team.
Nice.
So good for Detroit was one. Anyway, the Tampa Bay Lightning are back on their BS. And I say that affectionately. I actually have zero problem with the Lightning. They are a fun team. They are not – it's not like watching Colorado, which is all flat. I mean, they are – I'm not saying there's no substance there because there's plenty of substance to the Avalanche. Man, but the Lightning have this high offensive end, and they're doing this without Braden Point. But, man, do they grind it out, and they grind you down. They are the best team in the NHL at making one or two goals stand up. Mm-hmm. That game was 1-1, and then they did it again. Just when you think you got them, you don't. So they score late. It's Andre Palat, actually, his knee that deflects in that Mikhail Sergachev shot. Sergachev, who had gone like two moons without a goal,
yeah,
had the first goal of the game, which was also through a lot of screens, a lot of bodies. Shesterkin really never saw it. And then this one also through traffic and then goes off the knee of Palat and just, you know, wide of the blocker side of Shesterkin. And that's the second goal. It's, what, a minute 50 to go. The Rangers pulled the goalie, but they never really threatened once they pulled the goalie, and then Brandon Hagel scored into an empty net. But, man, this Andrei Vasilevskiy, Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos, they are just awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome, awesome, awesome. First road win in the series, and the Lightning have a chance to close it out Saturday night at Emily Arena and set up Tampa, Colorado in the Stanley Cup Finals, and that would be awesome. All right, let's move on to a little baseball note real quick. Tony La Russa went galaxy brain. Gosh. And lost. Quick setup, and then we'll let the play-by-play handle it. Sixth inning, Freddie Freeman, RBI single for the Dodgers, who are playing in Chicago against the White Sox. The single comes off left-handed pitcher Bennett Sousa. Gave the Dodgers a 6-5 lead. Trey Turner's up. Count goes to 0-2. Wild pitch moves Freeman up to second. La Russa with a 1-2 count to the right-handed hitting Turner, who was last year's batting champ, hitting over 300 again this year, ordered Sousa to put Turner on first intentionally.
Now, wait a second.
They're going to intentionally walk him.
On 1-2?
Yep.
Can you explain that to me?
I would think you don't want Turner to do any more damage, and you want to take advantage of the lefty-lefty.
Typically, at two strikes, the league batting average is quite low.
Oh, yeah. It is that.
When was the last time you saw somebody intentionally walked on 1-2?
Doesn't happen often.
Fan at the end is the
who that's not Jason Benetti. It didn't sound like Benetti. That was Benetti.
Yeah,
and Steve Stone on color. Steve Stone didn't sound. Neither sounded like they had any time for the move. Anyway, look, base empty. Turner this year on a 1-2 count, 250 hitter. But if you don't get him on that pitch, mm-hmm. He's 275 after the count. Is it 1-2? So you really have to make a pitch there. I don't like the move, but it's not the worst thing I've ever seen. But here's the thing. If you're just using numbers from this year, you're using 2 months' worth of data as opposed to how about like the last 3 years of data or how about just career data? And here's the fact. And actually, before we get into the data, because it was questioned not only by the White Sox broadcast crew, but the world, here's Tony La Russa after the game.
Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We're talking retirement and coach. I'm a simple guy, but I like colors. Tell me how I can color code money and get ready for retirement.
I like colors too. I like pictures. Colors. I like graphs. I don't like just a bunch of words. And so what we try to do is we try to break down all those words on your statement, all those numbers into three colors, red, green, yellow. People are amazed when they come in, and most of their money is in the red category.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Now, red means high horsepower potential. It also means high loss potential. So you have to, it's a give and take. You can, are you willing to do that or that? Yellow means liquid money. You can get it any time. It's not going to earn anything. Green gives you safe growth, but also gives you lifetime income. As we get closer to retirement, we need some green accounts. We need the green zone, we call it. In Baghdad, green zone was important. Green zone's important for you, too. The next 10 people, Adam, it's a $1,000 value. Golden ticket we're going to put together for you, your very own total plan that has a green zone.
It's a traffic light. I hope it's green for you. 800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter.
Can you explain the thought process on the intentional walk with...
Turner?
At 1-2
So let me ask you a question. Is there some question about whether that was a good move or not?
At 1-2 is the question. At the count.
Do you know what he hits against left-hand pitching with 1-0-1 or two strikes? Do you know what he hits? Well, you know what Muncy hits with two strikes with against a left-hand pitcher? I mean, is that really a question? Because it was 1-2? Turner was a strike left against a left-hander is not something you can avoid if you can. And we had an open base, and Muncy happened to be the guy behind him, and that's a better matchup. Here again, somebody disagrees, that's the beauty of this game. Welcome to it. But that wasn't a tough call.
Was there a reason for waiting until 1-2, though? Was there a reason to not do it right away and wait till 1-2?
Well, that's when the pitch got away.
So La Russa makes some good points. The base wasn't open until it was 1-2 because it was the wild pitch, right? But again, I get back to more not just using data from this year, but using more, you know, a longer period of data. And Turner has not been historically as good with a 1-2 count or after a 1-2 count. And Max Muncy has actually, in his entire career, been a better hitter with more power against left-handed pitching. He's having a tough year. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, that's the answer. Look, we had a chance to go after a guy hitting .150. Muncy's hitting like .165 this year, something like that.
Yeah,
he's really having a rough year. That to me is the better option. Turner's hitting .300. You had the base open. You didn't want another run. I don't think it's the worst move I ever saw, but I think La Russa's attitude makes it worse because Tony La Russa has to be the smartest guy in the room. Super regional time. First time ever that East Carolina will have it on their campus. Last time they were the, air quotes, host school. They had to go first to Wilson, then to Kinston in order to, again, air quotes, host the super regional. This time they've got it in Greenville. Aaron Fitt, D1Baseball.com. He will be there. You're a good luck charm. Let's finish this. What is the challenge for the Pirates with the Texas Longhorns? I think one of the only teams, maybe the only team, to sweep through a regional.
Yeah, they looked great last weekend, and I think the draw probably worked out in their favor with Air Force getting to the bracket final and kind of running out of arms there. But, you know, they're good. I mean, obviously they're really good, Texas. They were preseason number one, I think, everywhere, you know, for a reason, but it's interesting that the season has played out maybe not exactly the way we all thought it would with Texas. I mean, their offense has been their strength. Of course, you've got Ivan Melendez, the Hispanic Titanic, who's probably going to win the Golden Spikes Award. He's the best hitter in the country with the best nickname, I guess.
I mean, I'm not sure. The Hispanic Titanic. Okay, all right.
I mean, we pointed out, like, that didn't really end well for the Titanic. Like, is that really the nickname that you want? I don't know, but he hit Titanic home runs.
Who gave him that? Strong.
I don't know. That's a great question. But he's the real deal, let me tell you. And, they got a lot of power in their lineup. It's an outstanding defensive team up the middle, especially. I think they got the best catcher in the country in Silas Arduan. Trey Faltini at short is fun to watch. He's a really exciting player. Got a bunch of guys that can hurt you in the lineup. The thing is, they're very right-handed. And so I think the key against Texas really is you got to have some guys that can spin a really good, right-handed breaking ball. And ECU has some of those guys, and I think like a Carter Spivey, certainly, a Treya Savage, some of these guys that don't run out of the bullpen are going to be crucial in this matchup. So the other thing is, Texas doesn't have the kind of pitching we thought they would have
right.
when we ranked them preseason number one. Part of it is you lose Tanner Wynn to a season-ending injury early. He's one of the most talented guys. But Pete Hansen is a real, a real guy. Left-hander, he's their ace. ECU is fairly left-handed in their lineup, so I don't love that matchup for the Pirates. But those left-handed hitters for ECU typically handle lefties okay. I'm not going to rule them out there. And they have threats on the right side, too, with Zach Agnos and Bryson Worrell. So certainly those are key matchups to keep an eye on here.
There's no question about that. Aaron Fitt, D1Baseball.com. I have a quick question before we head over to Chapel Hill, where Carolina's playing Arkansas. Because the formats are different from the regional to the super regional, did the last format more favor ECU without necessarily top line starting pitching and really a by committee approach? Or maybe because Texas doesn't also have great starting pitching beyond maybe the first guy, is it the same?
That's a great question. And the thing about Texas is that where they're really vulnerable is their bullpen. And so if you can get the starter out of there, that's probably the key to beating those guys is to get to the starter early. It's easier said than done, probably. But, I don't know. I mean, I guess theoretically, if you're a team that doesn't have these horses that can get you deep into the game as a starter, then maybe you're better off, not having to try to come through a loser's bracket or anything like that. At ECU, I think it worked out okay for them because they won their first two games last week. And even though they lost Sunday night, they only had to play four games in the regional rather than five. I think if you're playing five, like North Carolina had to do, with a team that doesn't necessarily have exceptional starting pitching, that's harder. And so that's why it's actually impressive that UNC was able to do that and come back through the loser's bracket.
All right, let's talk about North Carolina, who scored a zillion runs in winning their regional. Arkansas somehow won a regional in which Oklahoma State scored 450,000 runs. But Arkansas's got a great offense, too. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't Arkansas put up 20-something on the Wolfpack last year in game one of the Super Regional?
That's right. Yeah, they jumped them pretty good. And a lot of those guys are back in the Arkansas lineup. It is definitely an offensive team. Well, I should probably rephrase that. It's a team that we thought was going to be really offensive, and they've been kind of streaky over the course of the season. Right now they seem to be firing on all cylinders, but Stillwater will do that to you. That ball really flies in that ballpark out there. But maybe that kind of got them right, and they definitely have the ability. I mean, they've got name brand players who have track records, and they do rely on the home run. I like that they're, again, up the middle defense is something we always look for. They're outstanding there. Mm-hmm. I think Jalen Battles and Robert Moore are as good as it gets in the middle infield. Those guys are fun to watch. It's a team that I guess the pitching has wound up being more of their strength than their offense even over the course of the season. But, it's not like Connor Nolan is the number one guy. He's not like a sexy stuff guy, but it's a good breaking ball. He's a veteran, who's been around the block. And You know, it's an interesting matchup. I think the two teams, Carolina and Arkansas, are very similar, almost mirror images of each other.
Aaron Fitt, D1Baseball.com, is joining us. Before we go around, by the way, the ACC's got four of the final 16, which, I mean, maybe not awesome, because they did lose a Miami that might have been a host. You know, but it's still pretty good. And the SEC's got five. So these are the two premier conferences remaining in the sport. They were the two premier conferences. They each put nine in the field. So give me a pick, Carolina, Arkansas.
I'm going to go with Carolina at home. You know, this one I felt like wasn't almost any of the regionals. It just felt like a toss-up to me. But, you know, Carolina plays really well at home. I think they're like 33-7 or something at Bosch. They're battle-tested. You know, I love the fact that they didn't roll over after they lost that Saturday night game. And,
right.
You know, of course, the whole drama with Scott Forbes being ejected. They come back through and win two games convincingly the next day. Well, the second game was convincing. The first one was a nail biter against Georgia, but they showed some toughness there. And then just blew out VCU, kind of with that four spot the first inning on Monday. It just feels like this team, they're resilient. Their bats are so hot right now. I do like, you know, the way the pitching staff sets up, especially in a short series. You can run Carlson and Schaefer out there, get as much as you can out of them, and then mix and match with the bullpen. I don't know. This one, like I said, I feel like it could go either way, but I'm going to take the home team here.
What about the Pirates and the Longhorns?
Yeah, that's another one that, like, on paper, you feel like Texas has more star power. Certainly they were in Omaha last year. They've got the name brand, you know, the history, 37 trips to Omaha, all that stuff. But this, I feel like this is the year for ECU. You know, and it kind of feels like, I might have made this comparison on your show before, but it reminds me of Virginia in 2014. Had, I thought, the best team they've ever had. And they were number one in the country almost all year. They get to Omaha. They wind up losing to Vanderbilt three games in the finals. They don't win at all. Then the next year, you know, I thought 2015 was the worst team that they've had under Brian O'Connor to that point. And that's a team that actually does get back to Omaha as a three seed in the regional, and they do win it all. And so I almost feel like that way with East Carolina. Like, this team is just, you know, you look at it and you're like, they only have starting pitching, and it's just like they lost all those guys from last year, you know, the high picks, you know, Gavin Williams and
yep.
Connor Norby and, you know, Francisco, all these guys that were like, last year felt like their best team. And that one didn't get there, but this one has just got the mojo and, you know, all these, some of the parts, they you know, they really add up. It's just a team that works, and they believe in themselves and they're at home. And I do love the way they feed off the energy of that crowd. So I'm going to take East Carolina.
Aaron Fitt, D1Baseball.com. Have fun in Greenville. We'll talk to you very soon, my friend.
All right, Adam, you got it.
All right, when we come back, a sport that Michael Jordan will never have to retire from. Big Rock starts today. We'll talk to Hayes Permar from Sports Channel 8 about it next.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcast.
Big Rock starts today. My friend Hayes Permar, who will be in this chair in about 10 days, sitting in for me as I pick my son up from a soccer camp somewhere. Mr. Hayes Permar, give us the lowdown. What's going on at Morehead City?
It's going to be a big week for the Big Rock. Two or three years ago, where basically the profile was raised for the Big Rock because Jordan showed up.
Yes.
And I can tell you that Catch 23 is among the listed boats again. So it looks like Michael Jordan will be back there. But the real tournament starts on Monday. This weekend is the Kerry Wagner's Lady Angler, one of the biggest ladies-only fishing tournament. Of course, women can fish in the Big Rock.
Right.
But this one is ladies only. So
why do we need – that just seems patronizing to me.
It's like tradition. Yeah, it's tradition. The ladies like it. And then the captain's party Saturday night. That's when our good friend Josh Goodson will be trying to decide where to place his money. You got to talk to him about that.
He puts money in a boat. He won't respond to me.
I'll make sure he gets up with you. He's too busy doing NC State NIL stuff, man. They're hustling over there trying not to lose any more Tommy Tanks. But no, yeah. he puts money in a boat. I'm pretty sure those guys have caught more STDs than they have fish over the past
I'm
years
sure.
that he's been putting in there. But captain's party Saturday night. Get in a fight at Jack's in Morehead City after the captain's party Saturday night. That's always on the schedule. But then this captain's meeting Sunday. The real deal starts Monday, basically 7 days of fishing, Monday through Sunday. You got to take two off. So if you're a golf course in the area, figure out which days Jordan is taking off and try and get him to come to your course because he buys the whole place out. That's right. Like, he probably brings 20 people with him, but he doesn't want to mess with anybody else. So he calls your course and he says, I'm coming. How much to have nobody else there on that day? And they say, yes, of course. I assume he's got to hit the 4C. Yeah, if you got to hit 4C, Adam Gold. The Country Club of the Crystal Coast.
I have not done that.
Course, you need to get down there. It's been redone, so check it out.
I've played Currituck Club, which is on the Outer Banks, which is outstanding. I give that place the highest possible marks. There's some other courses out there, but I played Currituck a few times. Absolutely love it. You brought up golf. In a way, because of the bankroll from a lot of the participants at Big Rock, is there a correlation between the deep pockets of sport fishermen, and professional golfers, and is Big Rock more like the U.S. Open or the Masters?
Okay, great question. So, yes. To be fair, we hear about, you know, and we see all the time, great stories of professional athletes who change their fortune and their family's fortune by their winnings in sports, right? Typically, this is not true for everyone. There are plenty of people who came from very little and grew up playing, you know, muni courses and made it to the big time. But oftentimes, people who are good at fishing or good at golf, they did not get rich because they played their sport well. They play their sport well because they were either born rich or they got rich, right?
Right.
I mean, Michael Jordan is not a rich because he's a great fisherman. He's a good fisherman because he can afford to buy a big boat and hire a captain, right?
Right, exactly.
But, however, I do think that in this case, the Big Rock is more like the U.S. Open than the Masters. Where, I mean, obviously the Masters tournament does a better job now of inviting amateurs from all over the world. But even those amateurs are oftentimes, you know, future professionals or guys who grew up with a silver spoon or a set of Titleists in their hand or whatever. But 2 years ago, a 35-foot boat won the whole darn thing. The Pelagic 2, I forget what kind of boat it was, but just 35 feet. And there's a 25-foot Grady White in the field. There's a 30-foot regulator in the field. And they're going against 85-foot boats. Catch 23 is, I believe, an 80-foot boat. So, yes, the average guy can win it. And, like, the 25-foot boat, that may be new. It may be a $50,000 boat. But used, like, somebody could have bought that boat for $10,000. And there's going to be boats in there that are $10 million all trying to catch the same fish.
Not to mention, if you have a 25-foot boat and you catch an 800-pound blue marlin, where the hell do you put it?
That happened 2 years ago. It was interesting. It was the first time ever that an outboard, and for people who don't really know the difference, think of like engine attached to the boat as opposed to an engine being a part of the boat. So if you can see the engine, that's a little bit lower on the tier of boat. Those aren't the ones we normally see win. You normally see boats, which it's that big, smooth, you know, look or whatever, and they have like multiple tiers. But no, there's a couple out there that just have a little T-top. And they're going to try and hook, you know, if you get it over 500 pounds, there's like a bonus. All kinds of money. $1.6 million was the purse last year for just the winning. There's plenty of other people that are bringing in bonuses or winning. There's a lot of other divisions and stuff like that. So
all right,
it'll be fun.
But nobody is guaranteed. I actually heard a rumor, and I don't know if it's because sign of the times.
Yep.
Is there a rival, like, boating, blue marlin tournament that is going to try to put Blue Rock out of business? Blue Rock.
The people down in Morehead City don't want this to be in the headlines this week, but absolutely. There is a Saudi-backed live fishing tour that is trying to camp up right there in Wrightsville Beach and just take all the shine away from the Big Rock. I heard they've thrown huge numbers at Michael Jordan himself to come fishing,
right,
at Curtis Strange. They're big bucks at our good friend Curtis Strange, trying, yes, to get him out of there. Many of the fishermen have said they are dedicated to the Big Rock, and they're not going to go. But, you know, there's a couple rogue guys that we're not sure where they might end up on that. So, what, you know, for me personally, I don't like to bring politics into it, but I'm sticking with the Big Rock for, yeah, now. Especially, it's still seen as the major. We'll see if the Big Rock threatens to ban anybody else who might take place in this Saudi-backed Live Fishing Tour, where I think maybe even the boats might team up on the Live, yeah, Fishing Tour and, like, fish together. You know, it's kind
boats
of an odd format.
Draft each other. I've heard that they have already signed Jimmy Houston to a seven-figure deal. So
they have, yeah, and a lot of people. Big Rock is a full 7 days. You know, a lot, yeah, of people would rather have a 4-day fishing tournament instead, with only one off day, and so that's what this Saudi back tour is offering. So
shotgun start, we'll, too. We can't have,
what would a shotgun start look like in boating?
Is,
like,
it the same? I mean, don't they send all the boats out at the same time anyway?
Yeah, I guess it is. I mean, it is. We already got shotgun starts.
We can't even. That's not an innovation. That is not an innovation. All right, I'm curious, because this would have been right up your alley, and I'm not sad that you weren't here this week for this, when you filled in for me a couple of weeks ago. Abby Lampe, NC State grad, brand new NC State grad, won the Gloucestershire cheese rolling race.
Yep.
She raced down that hill in England, muddy hill. I shouldn't say, she certainly didn't run down it, because I've seen the video. There was very little running that was accomplished, but she won the Wheel of Cheese. I know you would have had thoughts on this. I'm curious, what do you think?
My main thought when I see it, first of all, congrats to Abby, not only, yeah, like how she did it, but the way she's done her victory. I mean, she popped right up and said, I'm from North Carolina and I go to NC State, and like, that was cool. Like, she knew to it. Give props, right? Yeah. Just like a NASCAR driver going to the sponsors, she knew where she was hit. Like, I'm Abby, and I'm repping North Carolina and NC State, baby. And she threw the wolf up there. But here's my thing. No disrespect to Abby, who seems like not only a well-rounded person, but like a good athlete, right?
Yeah.
And she went and practiced it. But I got to wonder, and I watched the video a little bit, like, there are only two females. There was a male race and she won the female race. There were only two females that had a chance. Like, after about the first 10 seconds, it was her, yeah, and one other girl. That other girl was coming on strong. She held her off. And I'm like, if you're a female and you watch that and you're like an athlete, especially an athlete that like is already into like a physical sport, like, let's say, I don't know, what's a physical sport? They hit in female lacrosse. Sure. Women's soccer. They throw bows in soccer, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you got to see that and think, I could do this.
Yeah.
Because, again, I'm not knocking Abby's athleticism, but she, by her own admission, she practiced one time on a hill in Raleigh that wasn't that big. And then smartly, because I'm guessing a lot of people don't do this, she did go out to the hill, you know, the day before or whatever. But I'm watching
scouting
this.
Yeah.
I think that, like, you could figure out a way. And part of it is because I've read so many interviews and seen stuff. I heard her on your show. I heard her on your station. I've read the Jeremy Marcus NC rabbit hole with her. I saw, you know, a lot of people talking to her, right? She talks about like rolling and how you kind of like naturally pop up because of the hill. I think if you practice enough, you could do the whole thing in like 6 full rotations where you just somersault, pop up, somersault, pop up, somersault, pop up. And the fact that nobody has gotten like really good at this, like, are we, it's almost like the World Cup. Are we sending our best American athletes?
I don't think so.
To the Gloucester cheese race? I don't think we are. We
First
need more people training for this.
Don't knock Abby.
Okay.
I thought she did her best work when she was simply in roll mode. But she also said that she wasn't sure she was on course. When she started seeing the crowd too close, she,
yes,
realized she needed a correction. Speaking of Abby, you can actually buy a Cooper's Hill cheese race shirt with her signature on it.
It's a slick tee.
Dennis already bought it for $35. I'll tweet out the you can go to her Twitter feed, but I'll tweet out the link to it, because the proceeds are going to charity. So great for her.
Your point, her role, like she when she got in that role, even though she was going diagonal, that was it. But like if you prepare for that role and instead of sideways diagonal, it's a forward controlled role.
Yeah.
Like I think somebody can like set new records. And I think
the danger goes up though.
I challenge USA Cheese Racing to invest in the best athletes and get them out there. Let's pay our female cheese racers the same as our male cheese racers, and let's get them over there and let's win some more cheese.
Would you do that, though, for an 8-pound wheel of Gloucester cheese? I mean, Gloucester cheese is good. It's a semi-hard cheese, which at my age is probably fine. But would you do it for Gloucester cheese?
Nah, and I know where you're going, like a discussion about, you know, what cheese you would do it for. But as you know, like it's all about the thrill. Like this definitely looks like one of the things I would have done probably up till I was 25, maybe even up to 30, yeah. Somewhere between 30 and 35. Even in my 20s, like, you know, you'd roll an ankle, probably break it, but I didn't have insurance or afford to pay for it playing basketball. So you just, you know, you lay off it for a couple weeks. Like, same attitude seems to be a lot of those guys going into the cheese, the Cooper Hill cheese race or whatever. So I would have done it, but now I'm a little more careful. I feel sad saying that. Like, not long ago, I was throwing myself off, you know, cliffs at the Eno River Quarry. Like, I'm always subject to being called chicken to like jump off a spot where there's like 18 or 20 year olds that are doing it. And I'm like, oh, I can do that. And like, we'll do it then. I'm like, all right. But I think the cheese race is just a little, the chance of injury is just slightly too high for me to want it that bad. If it were Roquefort, true Roquefort from France. Cause you know, I probably never even had true Roquefort. Roquefort's like champagne, yeah. Where like everybody claims it's Roquefort, right. But unless it's just made in this one part, it's just not like a cool blue cheese. But maybe for a Roquefort, I'd summon my younger self and get down that
nobody's
hill.
Favorite cheese is Roquefort. Nobody's favorite.
Pulling back the curtain, we were discussing what my favorite cheese is. Dennis Cox, you'll appreciate this. No, but the reason why Adam Gold is the sports caster of the year, now that goes through TV and whatever. All mediums, right? Nothing says sports radio more than a sports radio host asking you your favorite cheese. You give him the answer of what your cheese is, and he says, nah, that's not your favorite cheese.
Nobody's favorite cheese is Roquefort.
You're going to argue with me what my favorite cheese is. That is like peak sports radio guy, and that's why you're the best, Gold. I love it.
You are. Hayes, I appreciate your time, my friend.
Can't wait to sit in there and talk lacrosse with the man. You were struggling talking lacrosse yesterday, man.
I was.
Yeah, I mean, what? Like, Dennis was angry. I could sense it.
You could feel it.
I've misspoken about lacrosse in his presence, and it's a scary thing.
Can't do it. I love the sport. I don't know what's going on. We'll talk to you later, my friend.
Talk to you soon. And Dennis, I got a present for you when I get in there, too. So I'll see you soon.
Look at that.
Gold, have a nice vacation.
Peace.
You know what? Stay a few extra days. It's good for everyone else.
Hayes Permar. We appreciate his time. He's got gifts for you, Dennis.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19th, 2006. But it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.